Today we got our next panel ready to go. Jeff Knox, looking for Alan Corwin. We all know Alan Corwin. Matthew, Eric, Todd, Doug, and Joe Waldron. This panel is a Second Amendment Organizations Report, and it's a good one. Come on up, guys. Corwin will come up here when we get him. Reach out for Alan Corwin.
Telegram for Alan.
He'll get here by the time we get going.
I'm sure Mr. Corwin will find his way up here somewhere. We'll go ahead and get started while we're looking for him. Jeff Knox from the Firearms Coalition. Always a pleasure, Jeff.
Thank you, Mark.
Go ahead, Alan.
Good morning, Gun Lobby. Do you know what the most powerful entity in the United States political system is? It's you. You. And I want to make this really clear. I want you all right now, you don't have to do it out loud, but I want you all right now to say in your head, say to yourself, I am the most powerful force in the United States political system. I am. Because you are the gun lobby. It's not overpaid suits in Washington. It's not these guys up here. It's you. And there's no more I gave at the office. Our movement has for too long had this concept that because I paid my dues to this group, that group, whatever, I've done my part. No, that's part of your part. Your part, your job, is to influence politicians, elect good politicians, and fix the things that are wrong. And if you do your job, if I do my job, we win every single time. Absolutely, positively, every single time. Yeah, well, there are some good politicians. And we just recently, people were talking about the process and learning the process. And the process can be intimidating, can be confusing. Here in Arizona, we've got some folks that will teach you the process. My friend, Representative Frank Carroll, is sitting in the audience today. Stand up, Frank. Let folks see you. Frank teaches workshops to show you how the process works, to give you a better understanding of how you can influence the process. Now, I'm a firm believer in supporting your local gun rights group. I live on you supporting your local gun rights group. For a long, long time, I've endorsed and repeated over and over again that your best bang for your buck anywhere in the gun rights movement, after you've written and called your legislators, your congresspeople, all of those folks that got elected with or without your help, then if you've got something in your pocket, yes, first place to go is your state rights organization. If you've got something else left over, then move on up the chain. There are a lot of organizations out there. There's a lot of great work. There are a whole lot of guys on YouTube, podcasts, that $5 a month makes a huge difference to them. You write a $5,000 check to this organization or that organization, that has some impact, maybe. You write a $5 check to these guys sitting over here that are putting out good rights content.
I will love you forever.
Paul will love you forever. Okay? It makes a difference. It helps. It's important. But the most important message that I really want to get out there is the message that I started with. You are the gun lobby. It's up to me. It's not I gave at the office. It's up to me. I have to take the action. So find, with all of the organizations, with all of the news sources, AmmoLand.com, I write for them, they have tons of information, news, quality information. John Lott's organization, you want to talk about a great resource. Use them. Support them. Find the resource that is giving you the information you need, letting you know what bills are coming up, when you need to be reaching out, and then take action every single time they ask you to. When AZCDL sends you an email and says, please push this little button and contact your congressman, we've done all of the work for you. All you have to do is click a couple of times to say, yes, I endorse this message. Do it every single time. Then make a phone call. Call the White House, 202-456-1111, the White House. Call the Congressional Switchboard, 202-224-3121. Say, I want to talk to my congressman. I want you to know that I oppose this. And one thing that I want to get really clear, we all know that Beto O'Rourke is the only Democrat who really wants to take away our guns. Mr. and Mrs. America, turn them all in, was what Beto, wait a minute, that was Dianne Feinstein. We're going up against something that all of the cards are stacked against us every single day. The media is completely in the tank for the anti-rights folks. And so it's up to us. And one of the things that you can do, coming up very soon, on November the 2nd, and I think it's appropriate that it's a second, on November the 2nd, there's going to be a rally in D.C. on the Capitol grounds. And if every one of you and all of your friends from all over the country will show up, then Congress, the media, the whole world will hear, we are the gun lobby, and we won't stand for this nonsense anymore. My name is Jeff Knox. I'm the director of the Firearms Coalition. I've been at this for my whole life, and I am very, very proud to be here and stand before you once again. I do want to mention one thing before I go. I want to remind you all on this Sunday morning to please take a moment to thank God for what we have. Remember my favorite Democrat, Joe Tartaro. Joe is ailing, and we love him, and he could use your prayers. Thank you very much.
All right. We're going to try to rope in this next speaker. He's one of my favorite people on earth. He's the only individual I've ever named a segment after on my program, the Alan Corwin Experience, and I think we're going to find out why now. Alan.
So they had to go find me because I did what speakers do before they get up and speak. Let me start by thanking Alan Gottlieb, who pulled all this together, and he's sitting right back there. Thank you, Alan. You all got a copy of the Worldwide Gun Owner's Guide in your book stack. Did you see that? The author is here. Where are you, Larry? There he is, Larry Grupp, the author of the Worldwide Gun Owner's Guide. You know him under another name, but I won't mention it. He's written 47 books, and you own some of them, I guarantee you. Stop by and say hello to him later. He's turning red, I see, and his wife is there, too. He's been all over the world. He's examined the gun laws. Every time he goes to a country, he finds a gun store and a shooting range, and it turns out every nation has gun rights, gun stores, shooting ranges. Some of them are actually better than ours. Most of them not. But the idea that we're it is wrong. And you get that from the media. And they're wrong. Now, I'm here to talk to you about JPFO. How many of you know what that is? And let me ask you another question. Would all the people who aren't Jewish raise your hands? Now, you don't have to be Jewish to join JPFO. You just have to love liberty. So I want I'll take it. So I want everybody who raised their hands who isn't Jewish, when this panel is done, to run outside and join JPFO for 2 years and get the discount. It's $40. Or don't be Jewish and join for 1 year for $25 and don't get the discount. JPFO, the Jews who get it, really get it. And their newsletter has things in it you won't see anywhere else because they really get it. And a lot of Jews are liberals, don't get it, and they're a problem because they're in Congress, they can't think straight, they don't understand guns, they don't understand never again. But the Jews in JPFO do, and you should support that and learn what they know because they reveal things in JPFO that you will not see in any of the other groups. And one of the speakers yesterday talked about the NRA has 5 million members, but the gun lobby has 100 million members, and you're the gun lobby. So join some of these other groups and find out what they know, and JPFO is a key to that, and there's a table right outside where you can join for 2 years and get the discount. Or 1 year, if that works better for you, and you don't get it because you're not Jewish.
Boy.
Now, the Jews were slaves, and in fact, almost every group has slavery in its background. Almost every single group. And the Jews recognize it, and on Passover, they celebrate it, and they celebrate God's liberation of the Jews from the Egyptians, who are still a problem. And I wonder how they feel about the Jews constantly going, God freed us from Egypt, and they took weapons with them when they got freed. It's in the Bible. If you read the first 5 books in Exodus, they left, they took wealth, and they took weapons with them because they knew they'd need them. And they got out. And we're not looking for reparations. Now, let me ask you a question. Is anybody in here pro-gun? I can't hear you. Are you pro-gun? That's a bad idea. And here's why. If you're pro-gun, what is the other side? Anti-gun. They think guns are bad. And that the right position to take is to be anti-gun. If you say you're pro-gun, you hand the other side a win. You should think of yourself as pro-rights. If you're pro-rights, what's the other side?
Anti-rights.
And who wins that argument? You do. You're pro-rights, pro-freedom, pro-liberty, pro-self-defense. They are anti-rights, anti-liberty, anti-self-defense. They kill us with the language. You know that. They've been talking about assault weapons in here. Assault is a kind of behavior. It is not a kind of hardware. You'll get this in the JPFO newsletter because I edit it. You will hear all sorts of pro-rights language in that newsletter and in their e-blasts. And occasionally an e-blast goes out because the editor of that doesn't get a chance to run everything by me. They don't want me to be a roadblock. And then I make corrections. They want you, you'll see this in the media, they keep talking about shooting instead of murder. On CNN, MSNBC, the networks, Washington Post, and the New York Times, there was a shooting. Shooting is a sport. It's the number two sport in America, bigger than golf. Murder is a crime. And they never talk about the murderer or murders. They talk about shooting and the shooter. They denigrate our sport and a righteous American pursuit by talking about shooting and shootings and mass shooters instead of mass murderers. They're killing you with the language. Don't let them do it. You will not see that in the JPFO literature, but you will in the NRA literature, and I keep trying to fix them. And I do fix them some. They are now talking about normal capacity magazines instead of high capacity magazines, because a Glock takes a normal capacity magazine. We used to have a group here in Arizona. How many of you are from Arizona? We used to have a group called TUG, the Unorganized Group, or the Umbrella Group. It was a group of groups. And all the little groups used to get together and have a dinner and discuss ideas and make trouble. And we were good at it. And it's time to do that again. So if you find me in the lobby and you're in some local group, rifle group, shooting group, any kind of thing like that, I still have over a minute, Mark. You watch yourself. I got a clock, too. Keep you honest. The Mark Walters Show. We need to get all the local groups together, and you do, too, in your state, and meet over a meal, break bread. Get together, sit and talk, you'd be amazed what happens. It's the First Amendment, the part everybody forgets about, the right to assemble. That's why they don't like gun shows. It's the right to assemble. You put a bunch of people in a room like this and good stuff happens. And you get ideas and you bounce them off each other. Find a restaurant that has a room. Separate checks, because you're all Jewish at heart. Separate checks. If a restaurant won't take separate checks, screw them. You won't write invoices for all of us? We don't need your business. We'll find a place that will. And let them write separate checks. Go there, talk. What can we do to improve the situation? Which legislators are good and deserve our support? Now I'm out of time. Thank you very much. Go join JPFO. Thank you.
This is a tough group, man, to keep in check, as you can tell. And I'll be honest with you, these guys are all good. Coming up next, Matthew LaRosier. Matthew is coming up for the Firearms Policy Coalition. Thanks, Matthew.
How are y'all doing? I'm Matt LaRosier. I'm the Director of Legal Policy for Firearms Policy Coalition. Right into the mic. Is that better, guys?
What?
I can do it again for you. I'm Matt LaRosier. I'm the Director of Legal Policy for Firearms Policy Coalition. We are a fiercely nonpartisan group of civil rights lawyers. It's not just about gun rights. It's about all of your rights, and that's why our slogan is all the rights, all the time, because it's all related. Without a First Amendment, what's the point of the Second Amendment, really? So you have to be always on guard for all of your rights, and the Second Amendment is most important, not because your freedom of speech, your other freedoms, are safe, but because they never are and never will be. So first of all, I'd just like to thank Alan and Julianne, SAF, and the Citizens Committee for the opportunity to join the panel and share this information with the attendees and those watching at home. I'd especially like to thank them for their incredible partnering on cases, briefs, and other legal action that we've taken. And in this cooperation between our groups, this type of coalition building, these are model organizations that are allowing for much more work to get done and just allowing us to expand our scope broadly and really make some wins in our field. But most of all, I'd like to thank all of our supporters, members, and all of you activists who make this possible, who make this important. Because if it weren't for you guys, none of us would be up here. So thank you all so much. So FPC covers all the bases. We are involved in the legislative branch. In fact, in the past few weeks, we were up in D.C. In fact, we had so many meetings that we had to have everyone there. There were more than 60 meetings in the period of a couple of weeks at the White House with different senators and members' offices. And we were there. You know, they were always asking, well, you know, what looks good to you? We don't negotiate with politicians. We were there to educate them on the serious implications that some of these common sense measures have against people like you and me. Because the fact is, when you let one side control the entire debate and you don't check it, when you have an emotional argument on one end and it's not being checked with a proper counterargument, they're allowed to control the whole field. And that's the field we were operating in. But we were sitting down with these members and explaining the real effects of red flag laws. We were talking about some of our members who have been affected, the real human civil rights consequences, and especially those consequences for poor, minority, disadvantaged Americans. That these people, when we told them these things and we showed them the data that we had gotten, they were blue in the face. It was like they had never seen it before. We also are involved in litigation constantly. We brought more than one challenge to the bump stock rule, the age ban, assault weapons bans. Constantly we're working on that. We do research. We just now, from speaking to our members made it clear to us that they want more to be done. They want more out there. So we put together a legal policy shop. We now have a dedicated gun rights think tank, which we're really proud to have. Adam Kraut, Joseph Greenlee, and myself were the first members of that, and we, within a month of us being on board, we put out multiple white papers, multiple policy memos, and we're getting solid information into the hands of politicians and members were calling us and thanking us because no one had taken the time to break these things down into plain English. I don't know hopefully most of you aren't lawyers. I hope there's better life choices in the room than that. But those of you who aren't lawyers might notice that when you read law, it's not written in English. It's actually written in this horrible Martian language. And I mean, I'm a First Amendment advocate, but I think that's one type of language that I could get behind being banned. That said, we try to translate all this stuff to plain English, because you know, if something's hidden in the third subparagraph of subsection D, sub A, on the third day of September in the Internal Revenue Code, right, you're not going to know about it. So that's what we try to do, is we straight up say, hey, this weird little paragraph means you can get arrested for literally no reason. And we've seen it happen. We've seen stuff like that happen. And so that's what our policy papers are there for. We, the three lawyers that we have, endeavor to read the Martian script and translate it to regular human English for you guys to be able to read. So check those out. That is a great one-stop resource. You don't have to go to any statutes. It's all footnoted. It's all thoroughly researched. And it's designed to just give you guys the equipment you need to properly have debates on all of these different proposals that are coming up. Not only that, we get involved in firearms technology, outreach, education, grassroots, media. We've had, I don't know how many cable TV appearances again in the last month since we opened the new legal shop. But the most important thing for us is that our philosophy drives all of our work. We have a set of founding principles which go back and are rooted in the Constitution, but not just the Constitution. Because let's be clear about something. The Constitution is an instrument of law, and it recognizes rights that existed before the government. So there's a philosophy behind those rights. There's an understanding of human autonomy behind those rights. The fact is, your right to keep and bear arms is related to your human right to control your autonomy, to control your livelihood, right? The right to keep and bear arms is not about, it's not, there's no whitetail clause, right? It's not about hunting. It's not about target shooting. And as much as I would like it to be, it's not about collecting weird World War I bolt action rifles. It's about the fact that in this country, under our moral understanding of human rights, there will never be a situation where you have to accept unlawful force as terminating what is yours. And we need to own that philosophy. It's not about the Second Amendment, because if the Second Amendment weren't there, we would still have a right not to be turned into dust because of an unlawful actor. Yeah. Oh, thanks. So, again, as my friend from the Jews Who Know was letting you know, this is, it's not about your gun collection, it's not about hunting, it's not about stuff like that. These are the types of discussions you need to have with people. Because for years, the discussion has been too tone deaf. People, when the person who's not on our side thinks about somebody who's pro-gun rights, they think about an old white guy, you know, in a cabin who's stacked 10 transferable Thompsons deep, right? Like, just a weird hoarder. You have to make it clear that it's not about that. You have to make it clear. You have to draw real life examples, right? It's easy to say, well, I don't think you should have an AR-15. It's like, okay, that's fine. Well, do you drive a car? And they usually say yes. Okay, so do you feel comfortable with me deciding how many gallons are in your gas tank or how many horsepower you have, or is that your decision? Because either way, when you drive the car, you have to drive it responsibly, right? I can cause damage with a Prius. I can cause damage with a Corvette. When you start to level with these people and speak openly and honestly with them, it changes the discussion. Then you can start to have an honest conversation. Because if your conversation is, I hate what you do, versus, you know, well, I have a right to do it, you're speaking two different languages. Understand that these people, they don't want to harm you. They just haven't thought about it the way you have. So, and again, like we were saying, what y'all need to do, there's two things that y'all can do to change this debate. Go out and talk to people. Make friends with people who disagree with you and speak to them like normal human beings. And two, join the Firearms Policy Coalition. Thank y'all so much. Y'all are amazing, and I thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Matthew. Next, from the Gun Owners of America, the President, Vice President of the Gun Owners of America, Mr. Eric Pratt.
Well, hello, fellow patriots. How are we doing this morning? It is good to be here with you all. This is a good day for liberty, isn't it? Well, I'm Eric Pratt. I'm Senior Vice President of Gun Owners of America, and it's good to be here with you today. I want to share a little bit about what GOA has been doing over the past year, although I will tell you there is so much that has already gone on just in the last month and a half. I mean, as you guys know, Gilroy, California happened. Then there was Dayton and El Paso. Then there was Beto, right? He wants to buy back our AR-15s. I'm not sure he could pass the background check. You know, gun grabbers like Beto have started a do-something mantra on Capitol Hill, urging Congress to pass all kinds of gun control. So in response to all this, GOA has generated over 3 million messages from the grassroots into Capitol Hill and into the White House. And I know some of the people doing that are in this room because you've come by the booth and you've told me. You've been sending in your postcards, you've been sending your emails, and I greatly appreciate that. One senior office confided to us that passing gun control would have already have been a done deal on Capitol Hill. Except he said, you know what's happened is that gun owners have been so loud and have put so much pressure on legislators that it has really stalled things. So that's very good news. We're at a pretty good place right now. So I want to thank those of you who've been taking action. It's really helping. Our activists have been very loud and very active. And several offices have told us that the sentiment on Capitol Hill is that they just feel like they have to do something. So we've told them, okay, do something. Pass concealed carry reciprocity. That will do something. That will do something to save lives, won't it? And so that's been our message as we've met with congressional offices, as we've met with the White House. We've told them no gun control, repeal gun-free zones, and pass concealed carry reciprocity. It's having an impact. I was at a get-together with a lot of political types recently, and I ran into somebody from a very high-ranking office who I know, and he told me, said, thank you so much for sending us the materials that you've been sending. They're very helpful. The constitutional arguments are good, but he said, you know what? Especially the political arguments that you've been making, showing how gun control is a political loser. That's really helping. Keep sending that to us. I'm distributing it around. And what we've been doing is we've been feeding Capitol Hill and the White House many examples showing how gun control could cost Republicans their elections. And that's resonating up there. Kelly Ayotte is an example of this. She, a New Hampshire senator, she campaigned pro-gun in 2010, but then she voted for anti-gun compromises while she was in there. So gun leaders in her state started encouraging gun owners to boycott her, and it took just enough. They did. She lost by 1,000 votes in 2016. See, it doesn't take a huge revolt of the base. All it takes is a few people to say, you know what, I'm just going to sit this one out, or I'm going to vote third party, and that has dramatic electoral consequences. And that's what our polling shows. We found that 78% of gun owners consider themselves single-issue voters when it comes to the Second Amendment. And 92% of gun owners say that they would never vote to re-elect a legislator that supports universal background checks. So those are the types of messages that are really resonating on Capitol Hill. Now, in regard to universal background checks, that is registration. Even the Obama administration admitted in 2013 that the only way for universal background checks to work is to have a comprehensive gun owner registration system. And you know what? The ATF has already started on this. GOA has heard from gun dealers all around the country that in some cases they are using the compliance inspections to make wholesale copies, illegally wholesale copies of the 4473 forms in their stores. So if you start running virtually every gun sale, private, etc., through a background check system, bingo, you've now got universal registration. Well, recently the Attorney General's been up on Capitol Hill and he's been pushing universal registration checks on Capitol Hill. So with him doing that, Gun Owners of America responded. We've ginned up the grassroots, and our activists have already hit up Republican offices with thousands upon thousands of messages in opposition to universal background checks just within the past 3 days. We've also spent quite a bit of time opposing red flag gun confiscation orders, not only at the federal level, but at the state level as well. Yeah, these need to be defeated everywhere they're introduced. In one state, this is a great story, the House Speaker had scheduled a vote on a red flag gun bill, and so we hammered him by having our grassroots members contact him, and he ended up pulling the bill from being voted on, and he told a state representative who we're very friendly with, he said, you know, he had no idea that this bill was such a lightning rod. He thought it was a non-controversial bill. Well, I'm so glad our activists were able to change his mind on that, but non-controversial? I mean, since when is gun confiscation non-controversial? I mean, these guys need to wake up. Now, in regard to putting pressure like that on politicians, I should mention that last year, very exciting. Here at the GRPC, in fact, GOA's Texas State Director, Rachel Malone, who many of you know, was awarded the Grassroots Activist of the Year Award. And boy, has she earned it. You know, earlier this year when the Texas governor started considering several gun control restrictions, she hastily got a group of people together, had a press conference right outside the Capitol, and she got Stephen Williford, the hero of Sutherland Springs, Texas, to show up at the event. He came open carrying his AR-15, the very one that he used to gun down that dirtbag in that church, the guy who had killed so many people a couple years back. In fact, it still had the FBI tags on it. It was very fresh. Anyway, so far this year, it's been really good. Texas has stopped all gun control. They've passed limited constitutional carry, which takes effect during disasters. And yet another county in Texas passed a GOA-backed Second Amendment sanctuary ordinance. These are basically laws that put the state on notice that county officials will not help enforce any gun control laws. By the way, GOA has draft legislation on this, so if any of you are interested in getting your county involved, please contact us. You can just go through the contact information on our website. We can get you a draft bill on this, so we really want to get that around. Now, given that I'm almost out of time, I should mention that we're also involved in the courts as well. We're challenging the ATF bump stock ban. That case is currently in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, and we've submitted a brief in the New York City case, which is before the Supreme Court. And you can read more about that on our website. When you're there, please sign up for our free email alerts. Those are very instrumental in putting the heat on Congress. There's action alerts there at the top of the page, so please take action. We're over 2 million members and activists strong, and it's because of folks like yourselves who are here that makes it so that we have such a loud voice in Congress. So thank you for helping us to put the heat on Washington, on Congress, on the White House, so we can defend our God-given right to self-defense. Thank you, everybody.
Man, you guys are great. Todd Rathner, Chairman and Executive Director of the National Firearms Act Freedom Alliance and NRA Director.
Thank you. I'm Todd Rathner. I'm the founder of the NFA Freedom Alliance and the chairman of the NFA Freedom Alliance, which I founded in 2014 to assure that there continues to be a focus, or that there actually is a focus on NFA-related issues. For so many years, it's been the ignored part of our Second Amendment rights, and it was something that I felt strongly that we needed to make sure had proper representation. Before I begin talking about some of the issues that I've been working on, I want to thank Alan Gottlieb and Julianne. I don't see them. They were here earlier, but there's Alan in the back. I want to thank them. This This event is so important for people to come to and to hear from all these different groups and all these different opinions. And as Doug Ritter said to me the other day, it's the one place where we can set aside some of our differences for a weekend and have a good time together and have a drink and talk about the issues that are important for the upcoming battles, and then we can go back to arguing with each other next week. Huh. So I want to welcome you all to my adopted home state of Arizona. Normally, I don't invite anyone to come live in Arizona, and I tell them that it's full of scorpions and snakes, and it's hot, it's dry, you don't want to come here. But the folks in this room, you're all welcome. We have, yeah, I genuinely mean that. We have hit our allotment of Californians who are trying to make us a suburb of Los Angeles. But I know you folks are true patriots and love liberty, and you're all welcome to come move to Arizona anytime you like. Since 2014, the NFA Freedom Alliance has been working on a lot of different issues. Because of some of the things that changed at the federal level, the landscape, the political landscape has changed for us. We've had a primary focus on state-level stuff because it was completely ignored. What people don't understand is that almost every single state has had NFA-related laws on the books. And if you read the law, if you read the law carefully in Texas, before we got to work there, if you read the law carefully in Texas, a person could be arrested for possessing NFA items in the state of Texas. People actually were arrested. A friend of mine was actually arrested, and we talked about it. It took him $15,000 or $18,000 in 12 months to get his NFA items back. And that was because the way the Texas law was set up, you essentially had a defense to prosecution if you were arrested for possession of one of these items. And what a defense to prosecution actually means is you get to go up in front of the judge and argue that, yes, I should be allowed to own this stuff, or yes, I do legally own it. But that means generally you've got to go get a lawyer, you've got to spend time, you've got to spend money, you've got to spend effort. And that was one of the things, one of the premier things that we fixed. We had a similar law in Arizona, believe it or not. The law was written, it was actually written in a very bizarre way, and it referenced, I think, 1930s or 1940s agencies that don't even exist anymore. So we changed that here in Arizona a number of years ago, with the help of some of our friends in this room from AZCDL and other organizations. We've worked in Oklahoma to make hunting with suppressors, silencers, whatever you want to call them. Sometimes I say suppressors because they're not silent, but the law calls them silencers, so I call them silencers. It just depends on my mood and who I'm in the room with. That's true. A lot depends on my mood and who I'm in the room with. So speaking of silencers, I just think that, well, after the Virginia Beach shooting where supposedly the killer used a silencer, and I say supposedly because I haven't seen any proof of that. I haven't seen any documentation of it. I haven't seen even a photograph of it. I could be wrong. It may be out there. Maybe someone in this room can tell me where I can see it. I haven't seen it. But after the Virginia Beach shooting, there have been proposals popping up all over the country. The President of the United States came out and said something less than wise, that he doesn't like silencers or doesn't like suppressors. I'm not sure how he said it. I think we may have gotten him straightened out on that, I hope, at least for the next 24 to 48 hours, and we'll see what he says next. But there were actual bans on silencers proposed in states where silencers have been legal for years. And the absurdity that they want to ban what is essentially a piece of safety equipment, it's just nuts. I mean, these people are absolutely nuts. They're off their rockers. The racially challenged governor of Virginia was the first to come out and call for a ban on silencers and other gun control measures, and a bunch of groups got together and went down to Richmond, and for some reason, the Republicans managed, for the first time in recent memory, to actually stick together know what their principles were. They convened for something like 8 hours or 10 hours. Not a single bill was filed. Not a single bill was discussed. Not a single hearing was held. And we managed to escape a ban on silencers. But I'll tell you something. As somebody that's been doing this for, well, not this issue, but as a lobbyist for 20 years and working in the state of Arizona for 20 years, this is changing. We are in a different time. We are going to see, I can almost guarantee that we're going to see a call for bans on silencers across the country in various states. We may even see it in states where we think we're safe. I don't think that we'll see it in Arizona, but I will use Arizona as an example. Arizona has a one-vote Republican majority in the House and a one-vote Republican majority in the Senate. And the one thing that I've learned is that, as a lobbyist for a very, very long time, is the letter after the legislator's name is absolutely worthless. It doesn't mean anything. Republican doesn't mean anything. Democrat doesn't mean anything. It's what is going to help me get reelected. And if they think that banning an accessory or banning a safety product, as I like to call it, is going to help them get reelected, then that's what they're going to do. And they'll run the proposal whether we like it or not. And we're going to have to fight that stuff. And that's what I spend my time doing. I fly around the country and I fight stuff like this. And for the first time, I think, in a long time on some of this NFA stuff, we've been on offense. And I think that for the first time in a long time, we're going to be on defense on this particular issue. And I need your help with that. The only way that I can fly around the country and do this stuff is if I have people like you contribute to us. If you want to contribute, if you can help, we have a PayPal account. It's just todd@nfafa.org. If you could send me a few bucks, I'd be grateful. It will help me get around and fight some of this stuff. I see Mark heading my way. I probably only have a few seconds left. What I wanted to mention also is that the NFA Freedom Alliance is going to be joining, and I don't know how to pronounce the name exactly, but I believe it's the Geddes case on bump stocks. We're going to be joining as an amicus. Dan Schmutter, sitting up in the front row here, is going to write our brief for us, and we're proud to work with the Firearms Policy Coalition to get that done, and hopefully we'll be able to beat this insane regulatory scheme that takes a thing and makes it into another thing and then says we have to cut it up or throw it away or give it to the ATF. And I hope that we'll be able to beat this thing back, and cooperating with our friends, I hope we'll be able to do that. I want to thank you. I want to thank Alan and Julianne once again. We couldn't do this without them. And I want to thank all of you for coming here and giving us your weekend. Thank you.
All right, moving right along, Doug Ritter, founder and chairman of Knife Rights.
Hi, my name is Doug. I'm a knifeaholic. And I am a freedomaholic. I am addicted to freedom, as we all are in this room. Knife Rights is about freedom. It is about the Second Amendment, and it is about criminal justice reform. We are dedicated to the principle that no inanimate object, even an inanimate object with a sharp edge and a point, ever commits a crime. We are dedicated to the principle that a person who possesses or carries any inanimate object, even an inanimate object with a sharp edge and a point, should never be considered a criminal just for possessing and carrying such objects. And I will remind you, as I do every year, that the Second Amendment doesn't say firearms. It says arms. Knife rights is the second front in the defense of our Second Amendment. Does anyone here remember what knives matter? All knives matter. This has been a momentous year for knife rights. After 9 years of effort, 8 years of federal litigation in the infamous Second Circuit, 6 years of legislative effort, we finally backed New York Governor Andrew Cuomo into a corner and ended, for all practical purposes, the arrest, jailing, and prosecution of as many as 5,000 law-abiding citizens carrying common pocket knives in New York City. After an estimated 70,000 such arrests, jailings, and prosecutions, 85% of which were people of color, the ethically challenged district attorney, Cyrus Vance Jr., and his assistant district attorney, Dan Rather Jr., their reign of terror over knife owners is done. After two vetoes of overwhelmingly passed bills by the governor, this time around, with our case on petition for cert to the Supreme Court, the governor held his nose and signed our bill, repealing the infamous gravity knife ban entirely, the ban that was being abused and twisted in order to make all these arrests. So besides making it safe and legal to carry a common pocket knife in New York City, you can now carry a gravity knife in New York State. Who would have thunk that would ever happen? You know, let me give credit where credit is due. Dan Schmutter, sitting here in the front yard, so to speak, did a wonderful job in years and years of litigation. Todd Rathner, my colleague and lobbyist, did an incredible job helping our sponsor, Dan Court, in the legislature. And of course, I always need to give credit to my wife, Sue, sitting back there. Let's give her a hand. We couldn't do this without her. It is a wonderful feeling to know, as a result of our efforts, literally tens of thousands of knife owners and carriers in New York City will no longer be arrested, jailed, or persecuted, really, for carrying a common pocket knife or even a true gravity knife. Let me put this into perspective. In the 9 long years that we spent on this effort in New York, we saw 30 other bills repealing knife bans enacted in 21 states and over 100 cities. I'm also pleased to report this year we finished off our multi-year effort in Montana by repealing their ban on switchblades and passing knife law preemption, the 15th and 11th state, respectively, where we have accomplished that. It was a pleasure to award Democratic Governor Steve Bullock with his own inscribed automatic knife at the signing ceremony. And indeed, we have reports he was enjoying it so much, going around the office, opening it and closing it, that his chief of staff wasn't happy because work wasn't getting done. And that's okay. In Congress, Knife Rights is actively opposing Senate Bill S.542, the so-called Interstate Transport Act, sponsored by retiring Senator Enzi with Democratic Senator Wyden, because it is all show and no go. In order to get the widespread Democratic support, they insisted that knives be removed from the title. They pretty much neutered the bill, removing a civil right of action, making it mostly useless where it's needed the most. You have to ask yourself if Schumer and Feinstein and the other Dems support passage of this bill, how bad is it? And it is bad. It is bad because they support this bill, because they oppose efforts to fix the seriously flawed Firearms Owners Protection Act by adding a right of action. They are trying to hotline the ITA, but so far we have succeeded in stopping it. But we need more senators to oppose the ITA. It's a very dangerous bill, not just for knife owners, but for gun owners as well. We can't let the Senate set the precedent that not fixing the problem with FOPA is okay. Meanwhile, our own Knife Owners Protection Act bill, H.R. 88, in the House is now a bipartisan bill, which includes a civil right of action, giving the bill the teeth that is needed in rogue states like New Jersey and New York. COPA also, I'm pleased to say, repeals the infamous 1958 Federal Switchblade Act. I close by urging, as many have done here, to dedicate yourself over the next 14 months to get out the vote in 2020. We must support those who, like us, believe in freedom and justice, because the alternative is a cancer that would carve out the very heart of freedom in this great country and destroy what makes America great. Remind your politicians that pandering to those who will never vote for them is a fool's errand. The secret is getting the vote out of those who stand at the core principles of America and the Second Amendment. So again, what knives matter? Thank you so very much to Alan and Julianne and everyone for being here.
Thank you, Doug. Joe Waldron, Legislative Affairs Director, Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. Joe.
Good morning, deplorables. My name is Joe Waldron, and as Mark just said, I'm the Legislative Director of Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. Or should I say good morning, paranoids? For many years now, we've been saying that the other side wants to take our guns, and they call us paranoid in response. Well, the cat is out of the bag. We're not paranoid. They've been lying for decades. CCRKBA is the lobbying side of the Liberty Park home. SAF is a 501c3 and thus prohibited from directly advocating legislation. So CCRKBA was born, I would add, 2 to 3 years before the NRA formed ILA, its dedicated lobbying arm. Registered as a 501c4 under IRS rules, and lobbying is our game. Our principal focus is lobbying at the federal level, as you have already heard from Mark Barnes, our representative on Capitol Hill. I think he spoke yesterday. Lobbyists play a critical role in passing or opposing legislation. Lobbyist is frequently used as a four-letter word unless it's your lobbyist. We're frequently called special interests, but when nearly half of the homes in this country, if not more than half, have a gun in them, at what point do we become a public interest? Certainly representing a fundamental enumerated right in the Bill of Rights has got to be a public interest. One more thing about lobbyists. Most contract lobbyists in Washington or your state capitol, people in the $3,000 suits, are there with their hands out. They're looking for taxpayer dollars, your dollars, to support their clients. Gun lobbyists are generally there with their hands up, just asking that we be left alone, that our rights not be diminished. And we usually pay our own way on the infrequent occasions we do ask for a funded program. Classic example, the Pittman-Robertson Act, which goes back 70, 80 years now, money for conservation donated by gun owners as part of an excise tax for that conservation. It goes back to the 30s. But there's something else that you must understand. Registered lobbyists are the public face of the gun lobby. They're the point of the spear. But without the weight of the shaft behind it, the point won't penetrate. You are the gun lobby, too. Our strength isn't in the millions of dollars we contribute to political campaigns or candidates. Our strength rests with the fact that there are 100 million gun owners out there. The gun lobby is every American who owns a gun. It's called grassroots lobbying. You've heard it here before this morning, and it's effective. And it's important. In fact, no, it's not important. It's critical that each of you communicate your concerns with your elected officials. 80 years ago, the great American humorist Will Rogers observed, "It's not what we don't know that gets us in trouble. It's what we know that isn't so." Half, maybe more, of a lobbyist's job is education. There's an incredible amount of misinformation floating around on the gun issue. Some of it simply ignorance, much of it intentional, perhaps most of it intentional. It's our job as lobbyists and your job as grassroots lobbyists to set the record straight. And that means communication, not just to politicians. It goes to your friends, your neighbors, your community as well. Again, there's a lot of misinformation floating all around out there. Senators and representatives at the federal level, senators and representatives, delegates, assemblypersons, whatever you call them at your state level, they need to be informed, they need to be educated. But you say my elected officials are anti-gun. What am I going to accomplish there? It doesn't matter. Inform them. Make them go on record. As competitive rifle shooters, we like to say, run them up and disc them. If they want to come out in writing and say they're anti-gun, let them do that. To do that, you need ammunition. In this case, information. Hopefully, you're going to get a lot of that, or you have gotten a lot of that right here this weekend, both in the presentations, in the panel discussions you've heard, and in the publications you've been provided. Every month in CCRKBA's Point Blank, our monthly newsletter, we publish an item called the Citizen Action Project, the CAP. It takes a look at a single piece of legislation, usually at the federal level, or sometimes ongoing firearms rights-related activity somewhere in the U.S., and asks members to write, call, email the appropriate individuals at whatever level to get the message out, pro or con. The CAP is just a suggestion. It's a reminder, an instigator. What have I done this month to protect our rights? While we suggest a topic, you pick whatever pushes your button. The important thing is to communicate and to communicate often. They need to know who you are. Typically, there are 100 or more gun bills filed in Congress every session. At the state level, you'll find dozens, if not more than dozens, of gun-related bills filed, pro or con. If you write a letter, it should be short, no more than one or two points, one or two pages. And whatever you do, check the spelling. The first thing that's going to pop out in a letter when a legislative aide or the legislator reads it is a misspelled word. I'm going to cut it off here. I'd like to thank you for your time. Contact information for your elected officials, for your congressional elected officials, if you go to www.ccrkba.org, go down the left column, the left margin, and you'll see contact information for elected officials here. Those are federal officials. Again, our principal focus is at the federal level, but it's also in the blue pages of your telephone directory. But please, I don't care how you do it. You don't like to write letters. You're not good at writing letters. You can go straight to the White House, fill in the blanks, and send your opinions to the president. He won't read it. No, the president probably won't read it. But they count. They take numbers. What are the calls we're getting? What's the position one way or the other? And those numbers influence what the man does. Thank you.
Jeff Knox wants to take about 10 seconds and clarify one thing before we bring Julianne up for a special guest.
Hi, guys. Just one more time, real quick. My name's Jeff Knox. I'm with the Firearms Coalition, and there's a little bit of confusion out there. My father founded the Firearms Coalition in 1984. For over 35 years, the Firearms Coalition has been working for you. When the Firearms Policy Coalition came along, a little bit of confusion came up with that. But just recently, another group has come out called the American Firearms Coalition. And there's more confusion going on. We are the Firearms Coalition. If it doesn't say Knox, it's not the Firearms Coalition. So I just wanted to get that out there, and I thank you for your time and your attention today. Thanks a lot. Thank you, Jeff.
Julianne.